It's episode 94 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about hodgepodge topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Spotlight, The Night Before, and Creed. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look us up on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe, or head over to our page on Facebook and like us there. You just have to look for the Hodgepodge Podcast.
Man, we're a little oversaturated.
We are. It's a bitch to update everything whenever I do a review. I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta go there. I gotta go there. And then I have a Google page, my old.
That's right. I still get notifications.
Yeah,
see what Doug's been. See what you've been missing from Doug on Google Plus. Nothing. I haven't done Google Plus in forever.
As I said this before, I think that their metrics are screwed up on that site because I'm always like, I got like 20 views on something and I just posted. I'm like, that's impossible.
That's not right.
So last episode we had Matt King on and we discussed Spectre and Hunger Games and Jessica Jones on Netflix. And
you still haven't finished that.
Still haven't finished that. We're basically recording this the same day. And you son of a bitch. And we also talked a little bit about The Good Dinosaur. You hadn't seen that. Matt and I saw that, and it was okay. But now, today, we're going to finish up, I guess, our November wrap-up as we come to the end of November and we start getting into Star Wars month. I mean, December. And
you were right the first time.
Yeah, right.
So only one good thing happens in December this year. Star Wars.
Not even Christmas. Star Wars.
That is Christmas.
No, you're forgetting about Point Break.
Oh, right. You're right. You're right.
Point Break. January comes early.
I think they're into extreme sports, just like me.
You notice how in the new trailer, it's like, they're following the Ozaki 8. They had to take out that part. They're like me, they're extreme sports guys.
I think they still left that part in there, too.
It's in there somewhere. It's so douchey and stupid. That movie's going to suck.
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
Anyway, so let's talk about three movies that we saw. Two, I think, we'll agree on. One, I think we will disagree on a little bit.
You know. We already know.
I'm setting it up for the audience.
Oh, jeez. All right.
The first movie we'll talk about is the one we saw the earliest. We saw this a little while ago. I just recently saw it again on Thanksgiving. And that is Spotlight. And this is a film by writer-director Tom McCarthy. Tom McCarthy did The Station Agent. He was also on the fifth season of The Wire.
I don't even know what The Station Agent is.
That's Peter Dinklage. That was his big break.
Okay.
And he's done some other movies too. But he also did he was on the fifth season of The Wire, where he played a newspaper guy. So in this movie, Spotlight, it's
all about that.
It's all about, it's set in 2001, 2002, and it's about the Boston Globe and how their investigative team called Spotlight basically broke the story about the Catholic Church scandal of priests touching little boys and girls, just basically molesting kids. And this movie is... As of right now, because we're heading into December, it's the best movie of the year for me.
It's fantastic. I agree. It's hands down. This is a fantastic movie.
I mean, from top to bottom, the script is excellent. The cast is incredible.
Which is great. Yeah.
And it's an important movie. Yeah. It's kind of like how I felt when we saw 12 Years a Slave a couple years ago. Yeah. And we were like, this is an important movie that you have to see.
Yeah, it's one of those things where at this point, because of this, really, we all know it happened.
Right.
We all know what happened, but it's one of those things we like to, as a society, just kind of push in the dredges of our minds and like almost like it didn't happen. And then you see a movie like this, it's just like, wow.
Yeah. No matter what we knew about this, I think we were both still shocked by like the numbers that came out, how many priests and all this. And at the end, they do a credit roll basically where they have all the cities where this has happened.
This affected Raleigh's in there.
Right down in the middle of like the first or second page is Raleigh, North Carolina. Yep. So
of all the, they basically listed the cities where a priest was
found guilty, I guess, of this, but not guilty in the court of law.
But yes, it's clearly based on the criteria that they found in to use for their article or their series of
articles
in for the Globe. Yeah. And it was, like you said, the numbers, like that was one of the things with me is they did a real good job in this movie to have the audience feel the same way that a lot of times that the character is feeling in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're when they're trying to determine, I think at this point they've actually determined that it is a credible story.
Right.
But when they're trying to determine the depths of the story,
right,
they have what they're calling a legitimate source that they're talking with. Mm-hmm. Someone who's written a book about
that was Sight.
The quote-unquote phenomenon.
That was Sight.
Yeah.
He was played by Richard Jenkins. He was uncredited. I actually had to look him up.
Jenkins.
Because I knew I recognized the voice, and I had to look it up on Google.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Tom McCarthy
If you don't know who Richard Jenkins is, if you saw his face, you'd know who Richard Jenkins is.
He was the father in Step Brothers.
Yeah.
You gotta get jobs! Yeah, you gotta get the hell out of his house!
Did he win for The Visitor, or was he nominated?
I think he was nominated for The Visitor.
Anyway, like, they're talking with this character on phone.
Right.
They're just on the phone.
They never meet him.
And they're like, we have upwards of what we think are, I don't remember the
13.
Number. 13 possible molestation...
Priests
who have...
Right.
Who are possibly molesting kids within the Boston area. Does that seem right to you?
And he's like,
they're thinking
high.
They're thinking that can't be right. That's too high.
Right.
He's like, actually, that seems rather low given
the metrics
that I use. It should be more like 6%, which raised the tally up into the like hundreds.
It was
90. I'm sorry, 90. About 90. And you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah. And that's what John Slattery did. He was the editor, and he's like, 90 priests.
90?
90?
And then it turns out that was actually
very close
to the number. It was 89 to 90 something. And you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah. And just in Boston alone.
Yeah. And I mean, it's...
Yeah. They really... It's I love movies like this. I love like investigative journalism movies. I like, you know, All the President's Men. But I also liked from a few years ago, State of Play.
Yeah,
with,
that was
Russell
very Crow. Underrated
yeah,
movie.
Russell yeah. Crowe and Rachel McAdams was in that too. And so she kind of reprises, you know, does a similar kind of role in this one. And so it's Rachel McAdams is in this one. Mark Ruffalo is one of the main guys
He's pretty much the... He and Rachel are
He's the main firebrand, really. Yeah, yeah. And then you got Michael Keaton, who runs the Spotlight team. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the other guy's name who's in it. The other guy who's in their group.
He's not a staple known name like all
No,
the
yeah, he's not. But he was good in it because his character had a family. And then he found that... he found out... that his neighborhood wasn't exactly safe from this either. I'll just leave it like that.
Yeah, that was a great
that was a great reveal.
Reveal, yeah.
And
which you call it a reveal. It's not like some big plot point.
Right,
in the movie,
right. It's not.
It
was creepy.
It personalizes.
Yeah, it personalizes it for you and them. Yeah.
Like oh, it's in the neighborhood.
Right. Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
John Slattery, as I mentioned, he's also in it. He plays the Spotlight team reports to him. He's their editor. And then on top of him is the new editor-in-chief, Marty Baron, who's played by Liev Schreiber, who comes in from Miami and New York. And he's, I think they said he was the first Jewish editor-in-chief of the Boston Globe.
Which made for kind of a funny...
Yeah, there's a
funny
scene. Funny
scene in the movie.
There's a funny scene where he meets. Well, there's other funny parts in the movie, but when he meets the Cardinal in the city, Cardinal Law. When he meets him, that's a funny scene.
Yeah.
And because he comes in very much as an outsider. And basically, the way they get turned on to this case is that Baron, Liev Schreiber's character, comes in and he says, you know, one of our reporters did this column about this priest and we didn't do any follow-up on it. And they're like, oh, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, they're like, oh, well, because, you know, it's done. It's a, you know, and they're like, no, he goes, we need to look into this.
Yeah.
And they go to talk to Stanley Tucci's character, who played a lawyer named Mitch Garabedian, and he was representing 80.
He did a really
families.
Good job.
He was fantastic.
I mean, everyone did, but he stood out for me.
Yeah, he did because at first you
especially
you're not...
that end scene. Like,
oh yeah,
like when you think it's all over,
right?
And he's like, I got my client.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. And then like and And because you don't know from the, you don't know in the beginning if he's a crank or if he's for
right,
real.
Right, like he could be a crackpot. He could just be out for the money. You don't know if he right. just wants the money. You don't know if he's just trying to drum up business.
Right.
But you come to realize through very subtle, it's his character isn't. It's not like it's there's an in depth development
yeah.
on screen that you right. see. But yet you feel like you get to yeah. know a story.
It's
of
very
guy.
Well
oh,
written.
Oh man,
it's very well written. Yeah. And he interacts mostly with Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah,
Mark Ruffalo. He goes, I like characters. I'll go get this.
And
guy
it's
talk.
Funny. It's a lot of the interactions between them are funny because he's like, yeah. he's all like, I gotta go. I got work to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think he's just like. At blowing first, him you off. Think he's just like, yeah, blowing him off because maybe he's a shyster,
right?
Or maybe, you know. There's a reason he doesn't want to talk to reporters, and then you realize that the reasons are not at all what you might think
right,
the
yeah.
reasons are.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he reserves his time for things that he feels more
right.
important.
Exactly. And Billy Crudup is also in this.
Yeah.
Jamie Sheridan, he's in this from, he's been in a ton of stuff. He was the walking dude in The Stand miniseries.
Right. Yeah.
But he was also in Criminal Intent, Law and Order Criminal Intent. He was the captain for a while. And, he's in it, and just a great, great cast.
Yeah, well, one of the things I was going to mention earlier when you mentioned the new editor coming in,
right?
That was one of the things that, you know, knowing the very bare bones about the story,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, I knew that they broke the story of.
Right.
I thought this would have gone down differently. Like I was going into this movie thinking that like Michael Keaton. Was going to come to the editor and say, like,
right.
hey, we got the story, we've got to do it.
Right, yeah.
And be like the hero kind of guy, but no, not yeah. at all. Like, and like pretty much everyone in their news organization, whether it was inadvertent or just...
it's like a blind spot.
Blind spot, however you want to call it, for the priesthood. Like, they buried these stories.
Yeah.
Or did not give them their... the credit that they deserved, and it was the editor coming in who says, oh no, we need you to focus on this,
right, yeah.
what's it going to take you to focus on this,
right?
And Michael Keaton's character almost fought that to a degree for a little bit, saying, no, we don't have time, you know, we've got other stories, we create our own stories, we
yeah.
find and I didn't see that coming at all, but
yeah.
clearly that's how it happened.
Because the other thing is too, is what you have to understand about Boston is that the Catholic Church has a major, major presence in Boston. I mean, like almost everybody in Boston is a Catholic.
And if you don't know that, this movie does a good job of.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And like the church has a lot of power in that town. And there's one twist that I won't explain, but I'll mention to you the twist. Where you find out...
The other lawyer, his friend?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, when you find out what Billy Crudup tells them.
Oh.
And then they go back. That actually never happened.
Oh.
And it never happened when the story takes place. It happened when the screenwriters went back to
So it was a real event.
It was a real event, but it happened when they were doing research for the movie. The real-life lawyer said, I... did this and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh my God, he did. And they went to the guy who Michael Keaton plays, Robbie Robinson. And they said, did you know about this? He's like, oh my God.
He didn't realize.
He said, I totally fucked up. And then they incorporate it into
wow.
the movie, which is really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. That was an interesting reveal. And that,
yeah,
honestly, the way the movie was going for me, I thought it was gonna be somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause they do make it seem like
yeah,
that
yeah,
there's
yeah.
gonna be some roadblocks
yeah,
along the
and,
way.
And it didn't detract or it was fun. I just, in my
right.
head, I was playing that out something different.
Right.
And it I was like, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, and so yeah, I mean, that didn't really happen back then.
I can see
then.
Why they added it.
Oh yeah. You have to add that. You have to.
It made a little slightly more compelling.
Yeah.
Like it needs to be more compelling.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It did add another little edge to the story, but that's interesting. That
yeah.
was after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, when I read that, I was like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah. But again, it's like we said that we didn't even tell what that twist was, but
right.
it's like you said, or like we've talked about, it's not that this had never been reported on at all.
Right.
But it was never front page news.
Right.
It was always like,
right.
he was, and there was never any follow up on any of them.
Because what they all say is, you can't string up the whole organization just
right.
because of a bad apple.
Right.
A few bad apples.
And then you also got to realize that clearly in most, if not all these cases, the the church got heavily involved and was telling them this.
Yes.
You can't follow
That's
up
the opening
on
scene in the whole movie. Yeah, you can, it shows right. how it shows how they the, so, how, it shows how they all work together basically to cover it up.
Yeah, so it's not giving anything away. The opening of the movie is great because it's
heartbreaking.
It shows you the depth of everything within 10 minutes.
Right.
Where you see a priest get
arrested.
He's
actually not even arrested.
No. He's taken down to the station to be questioned.
Right.
The parents are there. The mother, at least. Was it father? Was it just the mother?
I think it was the mother.
Okay.
Because there was a pattern of what they went after.
She's there. Then the cardinal, or not the cardinal, but
there's a priest bishop, there. Right.
A bishop then shows up, talks to the mother, convinces her. Somehow.
And then the assistant DA. And he tells the assistant DA, oh, we'll be another few minutes.
Be another few minutes. And they're just waiting. And then the arresting officer is just like,
Or he's like the night watch guy.
Yeah, but
he's.
Somehow.
But you can tell he's just like,
somehow this bishop comes in, convinces the mother, mm-hmm. not necessarily that it didn't happen, but that it's best
it's
for everyone.
It's not going to happen again.
It's best for everyone involved if this just goes away.
Exactly.
And then the next thing you see is that priest getting walked out of the police station by the bishop, put into a car, mm-hmm. and they just drive off. And you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It shows, it does also a good job without really delving into like all the reporters' personal lives, stuff like that. It gives a reason why they're all interested in this story. The one guy we talked about, he's interested because, you know, it affects his neighborhood. You have Michael Keaton, who went to a Catholic school, which is right across the street from the Boston Globe, and there was something going on there, and he's invested because of that. Rachel McAdams is invested because her grandmother is very, very religious.
Yeah, she's very religious. She's kind of fallen out a little bit.
Right. And Mark Ruffalo's character is interested in it because he's just like a crusading journalist, and he's just like, we got to fucking nail these guys.
He's also the fallen Catholic.
Right.
But to a very lesser degree, that the scenes with Rachel McAdams and her grandma are also very interesting.
Yeah.
Like, because she's actually afraid to tell her grandmother what she's reporting on because she knows.
Her husband's like, did you tell her yet?
Because she knows her grandmother is big into the church.
She goes to church 3 days a week.
And then when she finally tells her.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like there aren't even any words. It's just like you see them sitting down.
You see her watching, reading the story.
And you're just like, oh, man. It's just like. This is like you mentioned, 12 Years a Slave. This is one of those unique movies where the story is so very poignant.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you have these poignant stories, these important stories, mm-hmm. but they're not told in the right medium or the movie is actually just a terribly made movie of something that should be important.
Right.
But this, just like 12 Years a Slave, mm-hmm. is a very important story told in a very well-made movie.
Yeah.
I hate to use the word entertaining for something that's just important for you to see.
Right. But it is entertaining because it's a drama.
Just so well-made. Everything about this is great.
Yeah. Great movie. For my money right now, it's the best movie.
I agree with you.
Hands down.
I agree with you.
But of course, Star Wars has to come out. And of course, Point Break.
That's true.
So
is Star Wars going to have molesting priests?
Probably the Jedi. The Jedi. Yeah, I mean, they bring these little boys in and they say, hey, you want to be a Jedi? Hey. Well, come
and
into my
convince
parlor.
Their parents to let them go. You know?
Didn't Dave Chappelle do that? Didn't he do that on Chappelle's show?
I don't know.
I am most disturbed. I am by these allegations. Let's move on to a movie.
But you know, the other thing I want to mention about Spotlight, though, real quick, though, is that the name of the movie. Unfortunately, this is a movie that doesn't get a spotlight put on it. Just like one of those other almost independent type of movies where it's unfortunately the mass audiences are not going to see this movie.
It's getting fantastic reviews.
Of course
and,
it is.
And it is playing in.
I mean,
it's playing in a lot of theaters.
But I'm just saying the marketing for it, they didn't drum up any support for this movie.
I know.
It makes me wonder why. I don't understand.
It's a great movie. It's
fucking
better.
Fantastic.
It's,
movie.
It's better than.
But
all the movies we've reviewed already.
Just like all any number of independent movies that are wonderful, most people will never see it.
Yeah. Or they'll catch it on cable after it gets nominated for a bunch of Oscars.
I'm okay with that as long as people see it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather make money to further movies like this. But
because, you know, it's like we talked about with Bridge of Spies, how, you know, even Steven Spielberg can't get a fucking movie made that's right. not based on some sci-fi or whatever. You know, he right. can't even get one made. He's Steven fucking Spielberg.
Right. And he's pissed now, too. Yeah. He's like, I will never make a superhero movie. You will never see me make a superhero movie. I'm like, all right, buddy.
But how about Indiana Jones meets Captain America? Oh!
It could happen. I mean, you essentially did. Did you see Indiana Jones? The last Indiana Jones movie? It was essentially a supernatural movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway.
Let's move on to a movie that we probably won't agree too much on, because I clearly liked it way more than you did.
Yeah, it's more mild disagreements.
Yeah. That is The Night Before. This is a comedy. It's from director Jonathan Levine, who also did the story. He also co-wrote the screenplay. Jonathan Levine did the movie 50-50, which was fantastic.
Oh, man. That's another movie Seth Rogen. I don't think anyone has thought of. It's such a great movie.
No, they didn't. That movie.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, when I was doing my reviews back then, I was doing like a number system. I gave that movie five out of five. Movie. 5 out of 5. That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Seth Rogen, Anna Kendrick, my wife, is in it. Yeah, it's a fantastic movie. He also did Warm Bodies, the movie with Nicholas Hoult as the zombie who comes back to life and falls in love with a human girl, which was a cute movie. That was good. So he's doing The Night Before, and this is a film that stars Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt again, and Anthony Mackie is in this, who played Falcon in Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have Gillian Bell, who plays, she's on Workaholics, and she plays Seth Rogen's wife in this. The hot Lizzie Kaplan is in this. She plays Joseph Gordon-Levitt's ex-girlfriend, and her best friend is played by Mindy Kaling. And a bunch of cameos in this movie, too. I won't spoil any of the cameos, especially the best one that comes at the end of the movie.
Yeah, very true.
He was great.
So, yeah, it's not that I, like I said, it's a mild disagreement on this
right.
movie. I thought it was funny.
Right.
I just thought I didn't find it nearly
I thought it was funny. Yeah, I mean, this, for my money right now, because now we were joking about Point Break. We are going to go see Sisters next week on a screener. That could have the potential to maybe dethrone this for me, but
I can't really think. I haven't thought of all the comedies this year, but I'm not sure I'd find this the funniest thing I've seen all year.
See, for me, I thought it was. Yeah. I mean, I laughed from start to finish. It was for me, hilarious. But the thing is, for me, is that like when I saw the trailer for this movie, I was like, I don't know, that doesn't look that good.
Yeah.
And I saw it on a screener, and I was crying. I mean, it was so funny. It's just, there's a lot of subtle stuff in it, but it's the funniest one in the whole movie is Seth Rogen. Because basically, the premise of the movie is that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, 10 years ago or whatever, his parents were killed in a car wreck.
He survived.
But he's
he was in. He
no,
was,
no, he wasn't
no,
there.
You're right.
No,
he
was
there.
Right. His parents were killed by a drunk driver.
That's right.
The one thing I did say in my review is like, apparently there's no irony in this movie that they're going to go out and get drunk every Christmas.
Right.
It's like, your parents were killed by a drunk driver, idiot. So, but his parents were killed, and basically Seth Rogen and Anthony Mackie are his best friends, and they basically become his family. And every night, every year on Christmas Eve, they have a tradition.
They create a tradition.
Right.
Starting on that night.
Yeah, on that year, yeah, for Christmas
year,
Eve,
yeah.
They go out and they have a night of debauchery, and they go to the Chinese restaurant, and then they go to do karaoke, and they go to the FAO Schwartz, and go see the tree at Rockefeller Center. They do all this stuff. And then they find out that there's this party called the Nutcracker Ball, which is like the big, it's like a Jay-Z party, basically.
Well, it's like the big party that...
It's an exclusive party.
No one knows about, but a lot of people...
But everybody does,
Yeah, it's very exclusive, but still underground.
Right. And they were, it became their mission to try and go to this party. Well, now you cut to like 10 years later, basically, and this is the final year that they're going to do this because Seth Rogen's having a baby and Anthony Mackie's an NFL player and he's getting too famous.
Yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is stuck in neutral, basically, because he's still fucked up over his parents dying, which is understandable. And he's
basically been in arrested development since.
Basically, yeah.
Since that night.
Basically. Yeah. And, so, he comes across tickets for this Nutcracker Ball. And so then the whole thing becomes...
Comes across. He steals tickets.
He did come across them, but he did steal them,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I stole them. Fine, I stole them. And so then the mission becomes we have to go to this party at the end of the night.
Right.
And what happens is that right before they leave, Gillian Bell, who plays Seth Rogen's wife, she... She says to him, "You've been my rock throughout this whole pregnancy, and now I want you to have some fun." She gives him like a little box, like a Tiffany's box.
No, open it up now.
Full of drugs. It's like all kinds of drugs. There's like mushrooms in
it. Ecstasy. There's a joint.
There's cocaine. That's a key one. Cocaine.
Of course, the funny thing was when he was like, "She doesn't really know anything about drugs. The proportions are all wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
The proportions are all wrong."
Anthony Mackie, because he's a famous NFL player and he's also got a lot of social media game. He has a sponsorship with Red Bull, so they send them the Red Bull Hummer limo, basically, it's driven by Nathan Fielder from Nathan for You,
which is a funny show if you've never watched. It's a great show.
So they go out and they go and have their shit, and then basically Seth Rogen starts doing all these drugs.
So he's basically high the whole movie.
He's tripping balls the whole movie.
He keeps chasing each high with another high. Like he tries to come down from one high by doing another drug.
He's like, "I gotta take the edge off and do cocaine." "I gotta do the edge off and take some weed." And he's just like,
and it is funny, do not get me wrong, but it also is, and I hate to say this because I love movies like Pineapple Express, which is a lot of ways very similar. Yeah. But it is a very one note comedy movie, and that it's all getting high based humorous.
Right. And I'm not a big stoner movie
and
guy.
Again, I'm not saying it's not funny. I'm just saying for me it didn't quite play as funny as you thought it did. And for me, my favorite character was Michael Shannon.
Yes. Michael Shannon shows up as a drug dealer that they knew in high school.
He's like this wise sage esque drug dealer.
He's basically like Marley in A Christmas Carol.
Well, sorta. They actually loosely have him portray like all the versions. The Christmas.
Well, no, because he gives them the weed that takes them back in time and forward in time and all that stuff. Yeah. But he's Marley. Yeah. The best was Seth Rogen, The Christmas Future. Oh my God. So it's a really, really funny movie, but if you don't like stoner humor, and I'm not a huge fan of stoner humor, but this was, to me, this was very well done.
And I have no problem. I love Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying this isn't funny.
Right.
It's like on a scale of funny, like whereas you're laughing, you literally laughed from start to finish.
I loved it.
You didn't stop.
I loved it.
Show
me the L face.
And I did laugh and have a few chuckles, but other than that, I was just kind of like, I mean, it was fine. And there's... I did like it. Don't get me wrong. I didn't find it near as funny.
Yeah, I love it.
But it's still a funny movie.
Yeah.
And I admit that I'm probably on the, how do I say it? I'm probably, you know, on the other end of this. I think a lot of people are going to find this a lot funnier than I did.
They will. The critics, not so much. It got mediocre reviews from the critics.
Some
but
more like one of those dried up old.
Yeah, you are. Somewhere. Sorry, dude. You're not cool, man.
Yeah, man.
You gotta be cool.
But there is a, you know, some funny twist in this. There are a couple of times where I feel like, you know, if you're trying to make this movie, you don't need to have this serious part in there or something like that. There are a couple parts in like that.
Well, it's a typical Jonathan Levine movie. They try to put some heart into it, and they accomplish it to a degree.
Yeah.
I'm
more referring to Mackie's little song.
Well, no, that's what I was just about to say. His story is the weakest of
that's
all.
That's what
of
I'm referring to.
Because he,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt was fine.
Yeah, because because Mackie's story is so unrelatable to begin with because he's an NFL player and all this stuff. It's so unrelatable.
It's just somewhat unnecessary.
Yeah, they could have given him a stronger story, I think.
Yeah.
And I also, there's one cameo that comes at the end that I thought was a little gimmicky. You know which one I'm talking about.
I don't.
You do.
I can't remember.
Hannah.
Oh.
Right.
Oh,
that
sure.
That was gimmicky.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one at the end of the movie was hilarious.
Yes.
This one was gimmicky.
You're right.
But it does serve its purpose in the movie. I just don't like her.
I was about to say, we probably find it gimmicky just because we don't give two shits about
this. Yeah, we don't like her. So
we're a little older and that.
Right,
that's going to appeal more to
younger
the millennials.
Kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, Night Before, if you've seen the trailers and you're like, I don't know, definitely check it out.
It's certainly
hilarious.
It's really funny. It may be one of the funnier movies this year. I really haven't thought about it in terms
of... Fuck you, baby.
He calls his own baby. He calls his own unborn child a cunt in this drug-induced video that he creates where he's trying to tell his future self that it's a bad idea to have a child, even though it's already on the way.
Oh my God. Do like any day now.
Dragon.
Dragon.
I'm still tripping balls right now. You look like a dragon.
Now when you say dragon, I'm thinking of Starsky and Hutch. Now I want two dragons.
So it's again the disagreement in this is just a matter of how funny,
just how funny it
we
was.
Find it. It is certainly a funny movie, and in the wheelhouse that it's trying to be in.
Yeah,
it's not trying to be anything else. So yeah, check out The Night Before. Definitely worth it.
Yes. And the last movie we're going to talk about on this episode is one that we were both really looking forward to, and I think that it satisfied both of us. We're talking about Creed, which is the new, you can call it the latest movie in the Rocky franchise, but it's really more of a spinoff.
It's a spinoff, yeah.
And it is written and directed by Ryan Coogler, who did Fruitvale Station. So sure enough, Michael B. Jordan plays Adonis Johnson, who is also the illegitimate son
Adonis,
of...
That's the worst.
I know. He's a...
That's a little much.
He's Well, they call him Donnie.
I know, but I mean...
Which makes me think of Donnie Wahlberg.
Adonis was just like... Yeah. But to be honest, that's something Apollo would have done. Like,
but it was... No, but it wasn't his kid. I mean, he died beforehand.
Yeah, I'm sure he had a hand in...
Maybe not.
...saying who he was going
to... The mother, might have just done that, you know. Maybe. Apollo and Adonis, I don't know. Anyway, so they didn't really go that deep.
She might have been tripping on coffee drugs.
Maybe she was. So Michael B. Jordan plays
the wife. The mother was played by Felicia Rashad. FYI.
Well, see, now you're getting them all confused up there.
You're right. Sorry.
So Adonis Johnson, also known as Adonis Creed, is played by Michael B. Jordan. And he is the illegitimate son of Apollo Creed, who was Rocky's rival and friend from the first four Rocky movies, or at least the beginning of the fourth Rocky movie. And he was played by Carl Weathers.
Yeah,
I actually made a point to look it up online, the premiere, and they did have Carl Weathers at the premiere,
which
I thought was pretty cool.
Okay,
they have a picture of him and Stallone and Michael B. Jordan. Yeah. And as Dirty A said, Felicia Rashad plays Adonis's mother, but not his biological mother.
No. Right.
She plays Apollo Creed's widow.
Right.
And she takes him in.
She's known about him. Adonis for since he was born, probably.
Yeah.
But he's having trouble in the system.
Yeah, he's because his mother died.
He's put into the foster system and eventually into juvenile.
Right. He's in juvenile hell.
And that's when the movie kind of picks up. She finds him there.
Right.
And says, look, I'm going to, you don't know me, but I was your father's wife. And I'm going to take you in if you're okay with that.
And so
fast forward 18 years.
Yeah. They live in LA and they're rich and he has fighting in his blood and he's been going down to Mexico and fighting and stuff like that. And he wants to learn to box. So he goes to where anybody would go, Philadelphia.
But you can tell he's not just like he's got fighting in his blood. He's also a bright man. Like he's not smart. I mean, he's not dumb. He's a smart guy, right? So because he's got so clearly his acting mother. His whatever you want, adopted mother.
Yes,
he adopted his adopted mother. She got him the job he has, but I mean, he's able to. You can see he's getting promoted. He's got some kind of head on his shoulders, but he gives it up because he wants to
box.
Focus on boxing.
So he goes to Philadelphia to seek out Rocky Balboa to train him. And Rocky now is completely retired, despite the events of Rocky Balboa. He's completely retired. He owns a restaurant
again.
Again, he owns. Yeah, again,
again, again,
again, again, again. He owns a restaurant, and when Adonis tells him who he really is, he's kind of like, "Oh, whoa, hey!" And he doesn't want to train him, but eventually he comes around and he does train him. Adonis moves into like a crappy apartment building, basically, and immediately meets a woman who lives underneath. She lives downstairs. She's his downstairs neighbor. She's a musician, Bianca, played by Tessa Thompson, and they strike up a relationship. And the movie, we don't want to give it all away,
right?
For more than one reason, but this movie reminded me a lot of Jurassic World. And here's what I mean by that. Jurassic World is a spinoff of Jurassic Park. It's very much Jurassic Park for 2015. Creed is very much Rocky for 2015. That's
a fair comparison, yeah.
It hits all the familiar beats from Rocky. But whereas when we saw Southpaw,
it's no different than, and I hate to draw this comparison because this is such a more quality movie, mm-hmm. but it's not that much different than like Rocky V.
Mm.
Technically,
no, you're right.
Technically, the fighter in that is Tommy Morrison.
You're right.
And he's just training him.
Way better written.
That's what I'm saying. But there are similarities in the storyline.
Yes,
there.
And this one is. It hits all the familiar beats of Rocky, but unlike something like Southpaw, which we saw earlier this year, which felt like a complete ripoff, this feels like a reimagining of Rocky for the current generation.
A reimagining, I don't want to say tastefully done, not tasteful is not the word, but an homage.
Right. It doesn't feel like a ripoff at any point, but it is.
It doesn't feel like it's stealing anything. It doesn't feel
like
weighted down.
Like I've seen a lot of reviews come out about this movie. They're like A-. I'm like, slow down.
That's
I'm like
a little much.
B+ because you've seen this movie. It's called Rocky and it came out in 1976.
It's not in the A category.
Right. But it's a great movie. It's a great movie. And Michael B. Jordan's great in it. Sylvester Stallone is fantastic in this movie.
For him, this is just old hat.
Right. He
could step into this role.
But it's very much a different role almost as Rocky.
It's as he's progressed, especially in age.
Right.
He's a different character.
Yeah. He has his own side story that he goes on.
What I should say is he's able to step into this role of Rocky Balboa, knowing how he would progress as a person.
Right. Exactly. Because he didn't write this at all. He had no hand in writing this at all.
But
they actually had to convince him to do it.
As the character Rocky Balboa, he knew where he would go.
Right.
And it just fits right in.
And he has his own little side story that he deals with, which is very poignant. And it also plays very heavily into the main plot.
And likely into any future...
Yes, probably.
Sequels.
Yeah, and Michael B. Jordan's great in this. Tessa Thompson was good in it. Her role, I would say, wasn't nearly as important as Talia Shire's.
No.
In Rocky,
that's my only problem with that is that you're of course going to draw that comparison.
She wasn't as integral,
nor was that storyline as engaging.
Right. It's really more about the relationship between Rocky and Adonis.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas Rocky was able to walk that fine line between him and Mickey and Adrian and Rocky. Like it wove together a little better.
Right.
But this was fine. If you're drawing that comparison,
right.
it does lack.
Yeah, Felicia Rashad is great in this. She's not in a whole lot, but it was great to see her again. I haven't seen her in a while. And basically what happens is and as usual with a Rocky movie, in our last episode you were talking about James Bond and how you kind of have to expect certain things. Well, with a Rocky movie, you have to expect that,
Absolutely.
the fights are going to be ridiculous. And it's just and it's like, these guys are all playing defense with their face, basically.
Yeah, this is still a movie fight, and not just a movie fight, Rocky movie fight.
Right.
I mean, this is by no means how real fighting happens in the boxing.
And the final fight, it's a very convoluted set of events that gets you to the final fight.
Yeah.
But it would never happen in real life.
Well, again, just like a Rocky movie. That's the only thing... that was probably my biggest gripe with this movie, was the way the timeline worked out.
Mm-hmm.
With Rocky, it made more sense because it was they set it up as this promotional, the original Rocky,
right?
Oh, it's a promotional fight. Want to get a Philly boy because of the it? They made it make
work.
Sense.
Yeah,
they made it make sense as to why he was chosen,
right?
Whereas in this one, it just kind of feels
tacked on,
like it's a little too soon.
Yeah,
there's no way that this fighter who, granted, he's been fighting in Mexico, but in the true boxing world,
he's a neophyte. Yeah.
And he would never gotten this fight.
Right,
they would never. So
it's kind of like Punch-Out. He's Little Mac.
But it doesn't. That was my only problem with that. It's the timeline of how condensed they made it to him getting this big fight.
Yeah. My biggest problem with it, because the movie, the story unspools very well, I would say.
Yeah.
Even though, like I said, there's convoluted stuff in it, but the thing that really bothered me was the beginning was very, very rushed. Like, it seemed like he was in Juvie Hall and all of a sudden now he's in Philly. And he was just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And I they could have taken a little bit more time with that, I think. Or maybe they should have just started it with him in Philly looking for Rocky. Sure. And then they reveal who he is and all that stuff.
Yeah. And they all, it's a little funny. Yeah. I take that back. It kind of makes sense if you think about it. Like, he says he's trying to be himself and fight for himself. But truly what he wants is almost, he's still seeking, like, dad's approval.
Right.
And he does want the name, even though he says he doesn't. So it kind of makes sense that he goes to Philly and, you know.
Right.
Because you don't go to Philadelphia and find Rocky Balboa and then say, but I want to be me. I don't want my dad's name, right? But I want you to train me, but I don't want to have anything
well,
to
he
do.
Well, he also does it, he also looks for Rocky because people back home won't train him.
Well, that's true, but there are other people.
Right. No, that's true. But I mean, but people that he knew, family that he knew, they wouldn't help.
Right. And he does use him, calling him family unk.
He calls him unk. That's great.
But the movie
will really pull on your nostalgia heartstrings.
Yeah.
And there's one moment at the end where your emotions will definitely swell. You might get a little misty. In the final fight.
They definitely have throwbacks to the original Rocky. Turtles in there. They got his turtles in there. They got, I can't think of all of them.
Well, you were doing a count of how many flashbacks there were going to be to the old Rocky movies.
To its credit, only like two or three. Like, I thought there would be a lot more.
Yeah.
So to its credit, they kept that story isolated, to its credit.
The whole time, Dirty A and I were in the screening, and the whole time we just kept on going, a ding, a ding.
You did that. For some reason, I decided to, every time they do a close-up, I'd boop the nose. I'd be like, boop. The girl next to me goes, what is boop? Why are you doing boop?
Shut up, lady. We're watching a movie. But, Creed is definitely worth your time. It's really good. When we saw the trailer, we were like, oh, wow, this is going to be better than we thought it was going to be. And it really was. It really lived up to its potential. Look for Ryan Coogler to become a big-time director now. Because I will say this, too. Even though the fights are typical Rocky fights, they were shot expertly. I mean, they're really, really good. There was one... I think the first fight that he has, the first big fight he has, they were almost talking like it almost feels like it's one continuous shot.
Yeah.
Almost. But
which again is where a lot of the difference between like this and Southpaw,
right?
Show itself.
Yeah,
in the fighting,
right? This was just very expertly filmed and stuff like that. So I think Ryan Coogler, I think his name has now popped up because he is black and he's a director.
Yeah.
His name has popped up to be in Black Panther, but this movie shows that he can handle. That he can handle a movie with like action in it and stuff like that, because Fruitvale Station is more of like a character drama,
right?
And
again, like we mentioned, movie fighting all the way, but still entertaining. Like, you're still rooting and
you're
entertained. Like, it's no different than like Rocky IV, where you clearly this is just the most ridiculous of all boxing matches, but you're still
Rocky. If you haven't watched the College Humor parody 30 for 30 about Rocky IV, definitely just look up Google Rocky 30 for 30 and watch it.
It's
5.5 minutes and it's hilarious. It's so good. But what I really also liked about this is that it really is Adonis's film. It's not Rocky's film.
Exactly.
It is his film and you do root for him.
They do the right thing here.
They don't
try to upstage Michael B. Jordan or Adonis Creed.
No. Sylvester Stallone steps to the side and says,
Sylvester Stallone, it's not that he's not on screen a lot, but he is a side character.
Yeah.
They keep him that way and that's the way it should be.
Totally. So definitely check out Creed. Definitely check out Spotlight for sure.
100% check out
Spotlight. And if you feel like a stoner comedy, see The Night Before, because it is very, very funny.
Yeah.
Our next episode, we've been promising this for a long time.
No, don't say it.
We're going to try.
Don't do it.
We're going to try and do the final two prequels for Star Wars. We're going to combine them into one episode, A, because we're running out of time, and B, because the Phantom Menace episode almost turned into a full prequel episode anyway. So, yeah.
it's hard to separate when you start railing on those movies. It's hard to pick apart one from the...
It's hard to separate them. So, and plus, because the two are more connected because Hayden Christensen's in both. And the Phantom Menace feels more like an outlier a little bit because the little kid and Liam Neeson's a big part in it. He's not in the other one. So the cast is more uniform in between these two movies. So, and to be honest, again, when it comes to the prequels, Red Letter Media has already done it expertly. So, you know, anything we say is just going to be...
I still haven't seen that.
You have to watch them. They're hilarious. So anything we say is going to just be superfluous. But we are going to try and do that for our next episode.
We're anything if not superfluous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's what I say about when Matt and I do...
Can we just rename our podcast as Superfluous Podcast?
When Matt and I do the crossover podcast, I'm always like, you're 955th stop for all superhero movie news. And the number changes every episode. Yeah. But that'll do it for this episode, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.